Hey guys, it's Andrew. Thanks so much for downloading this podcast and all of these podcasts in the build-up to the 2018 World Cup. So here's the deal. The reason I'm talking to you now is because, full disclosure, I gotta be honest, I've always said I'm nothing with all of you if not honest. JJ and I recorded this podcast Tuesday night, and then we went to bed, and then we woke up, and this happened.
So we have a winner for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. The member associations of Canada, Mexico, and USA have been selected by the FIFA Congress to host the 2026 FIFA World Cup. Thank you.
So we would have been insane to release this podcast today with that having just happened and not even mention it. So I wanted to hop on and just give a few thoughts for you, and then we'll get into this final World Cup preview that we've got, where we'll go through a bunch of the different questions leading into this. We'll make our final predictions, all that stuff. But this was way too big of an event that happened today in Russia for us to just not even mention it on this podcast. Look, we needed a win, right? This has been like the worst year ever for at least the modern iteration of American soccer. And this is a huge win. I know we had all gotten really nervous about whether or not this bid was going to be accepted. The Morocco bid seemed to be gaining steam. There were geopolitical issues that were beginning to factor in that were making all of us really nervous about this bid. But in the end, it was a cakewalk. 134-65 was the final tally on votes. And here's the thing. I know a lot of people have been critical of Carlos Cordero specifically, saying, oh, this is just a Gulati clone that's coming in and meet the new boss, same as the old boss. And who knows, in the end, some of that may wind up being true. But let's at least be fair, and let's at least give this guy credit today for what he just achieved. I was reading from Sam Borden earlier today that over the course of the last 3 months, Carlos Cordero has spent 10 days at home. Himself, Steve Reed, and Decio De Maria, Reed being of the Canadian Federation and De Maria of the Mexican Federation, these guys, once they saw the bids between their United bid and the Moroccan bid getting tighter and tighter, these guys, they met and they formed this strategy, this three-pronged attack that they were deeming it, where they were just going to blanket the world. They knew that Africa and the African bids were probably going to be lost to the Moroccan bid, but there were a lot of bids that were at play, and these guys were just crisscrossing the world over the course of a three-month span to meet with everybody face-to-face as much as they possibly could to try to lock up these bids and make this happen. And bang, I mean, they did it. You've got to give them credit for it. Here is Carlos Cordero speaking with Sebastian Salazar on this victory.
Look, we had a pretty good path to victory. I told you that a couple of days ago. Maybe no one quite imagined the extent of the victory. But I like the fact that, look, we were supported today by countries who wouldn't normally vote with us in the United Nations. So this was not a geopolitical thing. I think the associations that supported us did so because I think they recognize the upside of a FIFA World Cup in North America.
The geopolitical angle of this is a really interesting one, and Sebastian Salazar, to his credit, picked up on that and kind of pressed Cordero a little more on that issue.
You mentioned the geopolitics. Did the current administration's policies, rhetoric, not come up at all during this?
It didn't come up in our one-on-one meetings with associations. It came up in a tangential sense. So when we didn't have clarity on visas, we had to go back and get that clarification. So it will come up from time to time in those sorts of areas. But look, at the end of the day, hosting an event of this magnitude, you're talking about 48 teams, 80 matches, you know, millions of fans, requires an inordinate amount of coordination across three countries, multiple governments, national, federal, state, city. And so there was never a geopolitical thing, but it was clearly requiring of a government, very strong government support from all three nations.
I have said, for people who have listened to this podcast throughout this whole entire process, I've said from day one, if we're going to make geopolitics an issue in handing out World Cup sites, then where's the hypocrisy from some of what we've seen? I mean, fine, the United States and this bid, maybe it's not perfect, and maybe some things that have happened politically in recent times have kind of cast a bit of a cloud over this, but you know, Russia has human rights violations. We've seen some of what's gone on in Qatar with the buildings of these stadiums and human rights violations. And then Morocco, in their own bid, they failed to disclose anti-LGBT laws during the human rights evaluation that was done of their bid. And I'm not saying that these countries don't deserve to have World Cups. That's not the point that I'm trying to make. I'm just trying to say that none of these countries are perfect. And once you start bringing politics into play, it becomes really, really difficult to pick and choose who's more or less perfect than the other. Soccer is a sport. And it's refreshing to me that in the end, this bid was handed out not necessarily because of geopolitical issues, but because of what made the most sense. You look at, you know, the fact that transparency has been brought back to FIFA. Again, Gianni Infantino, a lot of people want to criticize him, but the open bidding process was important because if you had this closed off bid and you've seen the U.S., Mexico, Canada bid score almost double what the Moroccan bid scored when they were given their evaluations. If it was a closed bidding process and it's open to corruption and you've got people who can bid for Morocco because who knows what they're being given under the table, but they don't have to answer to it, you know, that's a problem. If everybody's bid is public, like was the case in this process, it becomes a lot more difficult for shady dealings to go on behind the scenes. So in the end, I think we got to where we thought we got. We may have taken the scenic route to get there, but I think the benefits were just far too great for the FIFA member nations. $14 billion is projected to be the revenue from this World Cup. That will be a record. That's more than double what the Moroccan projections were for this World Cup. It's possible that $50 million more will be distributed to each member nation than if the Moroccan bid had won. It just made sense, financial sense, infrastructure-wise. Morocco was going to be in need of $16 billion for necessary development. So, I think the right decision was made. Like I said, it's a huge win for soccer in this country. And I keep thinking about this because somebody asked me recently, I forget who, it might have even been JJ, who said, what will this really do for soccer in the United States? And I tried thinking back to where we were at in 1994, pre that World Cup. You know, soccer was just, it was on the margins of sports society. And look what happened. I mean, 1994 essentially served as like what the Big Bang was for the development of Earth and the universe. That's kind of what it was to soccer in this country. I mean, it was the catalyst to domestic league, to all of this being televised, massive TV contracts being handed out, soccer-only stadiums. So if you think about the step forward that soccer took from that event in 94, you know, let's fast forward now to 2026. If you get the same sort of movement forward that you got in 94, what will that mean? I mean, you start thinking that like possibilities could be endless. And just look at the team. You know, guys like Pulisic will be, what, 27 years old. Weston McKennie will be right around that age as well, 27 years old. Guys right in the thick of their prime. You got to believe that behind the scenes, U.S. soccer is going to start really gearing up, obviously, for the 2022, but there's going to be a bullseye on 2026 for that to really become a landmark moment for in the history of American soccer. It just feels good right now. This was Taylor Twellman on Get Up on ESPN this morning talking about what 2026 could mean for the U.S.
I look at soccer, I think it's on the brink of becoming a major sport because the kids these days, on their phones, video games, it's FIFA, it's soccer, the games only last 2 hours. I can go on and on and on about what this sport means. I just think it's gonna blossom having the world's biggest event in this country. I think it's 2026, we may be having a different discussion.
Soccer was, you know, it's been permeating mainstream sports culture for a number of years now, whether that be through NBC Sports and their coverage of the Premier League or just, you know, greater coverage around the European Championships and the Champions League. And you can see it. I mean, you've seen it building. And to think of what could happen in 2026, man, it could just be such a monumental moment for this sport in this country, which is what we all want. The other thing people have been asking, I've seen a lot of questions about this on Twitter, on what this means in terms of automatic bids. Now, here's the deal, because I already responded to some people saying, well, you know what, we didn't qualify for 2018, but we've already qualified for 2026. I will backtrack on that ever so slightly. That is not official yet. It seems like it's inevitable that it's going to be made official where the U.S., Mexico, and Canada will get automatic bids. But right now, FIFA is saying it's a CONCACAF decision. CONCACAF has said that's a FIFA decision. It seems like there's not total clarity right now. But either way, I would be stunned if all three countries were not given automatic bids, which on the surface, it sounds like, oh my God, they're just going to hand out three of these bids. Well, remember, it's the expanded tournament of 48 teams. CONCACAF is now going to become a 6.5 bid confederation. So let's be honest, and I don't want to have to pull this out, but the U.S. were probably going to qualify anyway. I know we're trying to be humble and say, you know, can't take anything for granted anymore. But with 6.5 bids, it seems really, really hard for me to think the U.S. weren't going to qualify. Same for Mexico. The big winner, if these automatic bids become official, will be Canada. Because 6.5, they'd be right on the fringe of whether or not you think they would be able to qualify. So they are really the winner if these three bids all do become automatic. It remains to be seen, but I would say it would be nothing short of absolutely stunning if they weren't. I mean, can you have a World Cup in Canada without Canada being a participant? Doesn't FIFA want as much enthusiasm in the host nations as possible? I mean, if Canada weren't in it, I don't know. It would kind of paint an ugly picture for me of a lack of enthusiasm potentially. So that was one big story that happened today. You know, this is sad because this podcast originally, it was very neat and tidy. It was just under an hour, right where I like it, right where the bosses love it. But no, now this all happened, the World Cup and this Spain. On the eve of their World Cup, JJ and I were doing our Group H preview, and we're talking about Japan firing a manager 2 months before the World Cup, wondering, oh, that seems a little tight. Well, Spain have gone and done it 2 days before. Luis Rubiales removing Julen Lopetegui from his post as Spain's manager after Lopetegui had announced that he will be joining Real Madrid as soon as the tournament is over. This is unbelievable. Here's my only issue with it. I can't sit here and tell you right now if this will have a direct effect on Spain's performance at this tournament. They're still a tremendously talented team. Fernando Hierro was already the technical director of Spain. He's going to come in and be the manager. So in terms of tactics, the way Spain's going to play, I wouldn't necessarily sit here and tell you that there's going to be a huge difference in all of that. The only thing I would say is, why was this decision made? Was this just made purely out of spite, out of personal bitterness? I'm reading now from ESPN FC. Rubiales suggested he had taken the decision personally as the behavior of both Lopetegui and Real Madrid had not met the level expected of those involved in Spanish football. Quote, I took a plane, came back from Moscow, missed the vote on the next World Cup to be here, Rubiales said. We had to react. I know that whatever I do, I will be criticized. I accept that. But the values of the federation come first. I am sure Julen would have preferred it another way, and we wish him the best. He's a top coach for me, which made the decision very difficult. To win is very important. To have the best coach, very important. But above everything is acting in the right way. Maybe this is tough now, but in the end, it will make us stronger. Is that what's most important? That you felt you had been wronged because these coaching negotiations were done in a manner that you thought were sneaky? That's what's most important? I don't know if the population of Spain would necessarily agree with you, and I don't know that the players on the Spanish national team agree with you. Spain's players, led by captain Sergio Ramos, were reportedly in favor of Lopetegui staying on for the tournament. Rubiales repeatedly dodged questions over whether he had taken their advice before making the decision to fire the coach. Now, Sergio Ramos did appear on Twitter and posted this, quote, we are the national team. We represent the shield, the colors, the fans, and the country. The responsibility and obligation is with us yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Hashtag let's go Spain. So he kind of evades it as well, but yeah. You know, I don't know. I have a hard time distinguishing exactly what the motivation was behind this move. I don't know that it will really impact what Spain does in this tournament, but something about it just feels a little bit wrong to me. So there you go. Hopefully you're covered for those two stories. We felt terrible that we had recorded this on Tuesday night and weren't able to get them in. So I was more than happy to come in this morning and give you a little bit on each. And now, with all that behind us, let's take a look. Let's preview. Let's really dive in. Even as the cherry on top to all our group previews, let's get it. Our preview right now of the 2018 World Cup.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Hey, man. How are you?
Oh, very good. Very good. So excited. So happy to be done with the group previews, but we're not there quite yet.
No.
This is our last pre-World Cup podcast. This is just a general blowout podcast where we'll give you our final predictions for who's going to be the title winner.
Our sense of excitement, all those things, because I'm kind of done. I'm ready for the ball to be kicked, even if the ball is going to be Russia versus Saudi Arabia, which is about as limp a start as you're going to get.
All the group previews that we just finished doing, we did them back before the 2014 World Cup as well. Did this time around feel just like way more tedious to you?
No, the first time did.
Oh, really?
Oh, we had far too many elements in the first one. Oh.
No, but I mean, like, I just felt like I was was up all night. Like, I was like a student again in the library, like studying, you know, the ins and outs of Saudi Arabia and
yeah, there's
Tunisia.
Yeah, but there's always those teams. It's like, oh, do I have to talk about Tunisia? But wait, I get to talk about England.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I get to
talk
about Belgium. So, you know, you balance it out.
Well, it was fun, and I do feel like I learned a lot. I hope you feel the same.
Feedback's been fantastic from people.
That's very nice.
It really has. Some very nice things said, and I hope to get to some of them.
Now, we'll do the predictions at the end, but I have filled out a bracket.
I have not.
Oh, well, I gave you a blank one.
Yeah, I know, but I can tell you what my final is going to be.
But I want to know what the ins and outs so we can post it up in the room and we can follow along as we're going.
Okay, well, I'll fill it out afterwards.
No, I thought we would have a whole fun reveal. You don't care. That's the problem.
You were going to go from the round of 16, group by group from the round of 16 on the podcast, speaking words.
I was just going to tell you what my pre-final matchup that I couldn't wait for, like some of the ones that I have here on my bracket. Maybe should we do like one of those online things? There's probably different ones where we can make like a group or something.
So I did a bracket today, and I had had a Germany-Brazil final.
Oh, so you're just giving it away now?
Yeah.
Have you no respect for the structure?
No,
and
everything
building up to the,
is
to
tedious
the...
to me now. All I want is for it to start because I'm so excited. And by the way,
yeah.
This is a really open World Cup, and people are going around saying they know this or they know that. I'm telling you, there's so many variables in the mix. I don't want to say it's going to be a goal explosion like the 2014 group. I recall it being a huge goal explosion, but I think it could be. I think international football is so wonderfully debased right now. It's just not what it used to be.
But here's the thing.
And it's so fluid, and there's so many teams grasping, big teams, grasping for solutions in so many areas, and that just means goals.
You're right, but you say that, but then that was 2014. What happened at the 2016 European Championships?
I enjoyed it immensely.
You did, but it was not exactly known for immense goal scoring.
Smaller sample size of the world, Andrew, I think you'll find.
You're right, and maybe, well... But you've always said that you like the Euros even more than the World Cup. Do you? Here we are on the eve of the World Cup. Are you still prepared to make that comment?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm too excited for the World Cup now.
As you should.
And
be.
You know, I like to throw the odd kind of grenade into the party, see what happens.
Even if you don't believe in it.
You know, so sometimes it's good to mix it up. You're just straight old Andrew, punch in, punch out.
No, what I say, this is, these
same
are the things
shirt,
that I feel.
Same couscous salad every day. Same.
You don't know me at
haircut.
All. You should have seen the sandwich I had today.
Do you ever part your hair to the other side just to mix it up a bit?
No, this is just kind of the way it goes naturally.
Yeah, your beard is always.
No, it isn't.
Perfectly kempt.
You think?
Occasionally, you get it doesn't get, you know, kind of Russell Crowe out of control. Is what I'm saying.
I saw him recently.
Yeah,
he didn't look good. All right, so here's what we're going to do on this one. We've got a bunch of just kind of like broad questions, things that people. It's kind of like the questions that friends of mine who are casual soccer fans but become big soccer fans every 4 years, these are sort of the questions that they'll ask me.
Okay.
And I feel like, you know what, let's ask each other and see how we stack up here.
Pub chat.
Yeah. You ready?
Okay.
All right, JJ. The team that you are just, generally speaking, most excited about watching in this tournament.
I'll tell you, I flip-flopped.
Yeah.
You heard,
all these are hard.
You heard me in March and April talking about Spain, getting very excited. And I'm still excited about them. But Brazil, oh, Andrew, with the reintroduction of Neymar into this pack and the way he seems to have, I know they're only friendly games, Austria and Croatia in particular, just found his groove again. I mean, he scored a goal against Austria. It was just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And you've got balance to the team. Look at the front three. Willian on the right. Gabriel Jesus down the centre. Gabriel Jesus down the centre. Neymar. Then you've got Paulinho, Casemiro. I'm just...
They're ridiculous.
I'm so excited. And Coutinho as well. What about his goal? He took his goal fabulously. Firmino hasn't a look in to get into that starting team. Not initially anyway. So Brazil have just captured the imagination again in a way that, God, it was hard to imagine after the destruction of the 7-1 4 years ago. You felt, was this a changing of the guard in international terms? Would we ever see Brazil back? Because we'd never seen them humiliated in that fashion.
Were we really asking that question?
I think I was a little bit, yeah.
Will we ever see Brazil back
No, but
again?
The game seemed to have moved on beyond them. Like Germany had found a way to just cut them asunder. And I couldn't see anything of the flair of 1970, the flair, the occasional flair of 2002, the occasional flair of 94 in them, There was I saw nothing. They were just a shambles.
But there's always going to be an extreme talent pool coming out of that
country.
But
you say, you make these comments. Why is there always going to be one?
Because it's such a footballing culture. It's so ingrained. Like in basketball, there will always be great U.S. basketball teams.
What about
it's just such a part of our American culture.
The footballing culture in Italy? The footballing culture in the Netherlands, which has dried up. Their conveyor belt's pretty much dried up. England as well. Footballing, that doesn't really mean anything.
If you power rank the world's countries in terms of like how we just associate them with this sport, Brazil is probably number one on everyone's list.
I just thought it was such a seismic.
I don't mean that as a slight against Italy and Netherlands. They're probably top 10.
We're getting off the point here. I just felt it was, I didn't know how they were going to rebuild.
Uh-huh.
And then this coach comes in who's versed himself in European style, so he knows how to integrate that into the mix, but also seems to be finding the soul of Brazilian football again. They're fun to watch. I want to watch them. They were all Neymar-centric. The minute he broke his back against Colombia, right, you felt this is this team done. You don't feel that way now.
Yeah. I'm just saying that if I had just said what you said, that people, my Twitter mentions would, oh my God.
No.
I can't even imagine
just
the hateful things that would be thrown at me.
I'm just challenging like the idea that Brazil will always be. Like Brazil had a fallow period in, you know, the 1980s as well. We forget about that. It's like we had that great team in 82 that didn't win. Mm-hmm. The team in 90 was poor and we had to wait to 94 to get another Brazilian championship. So, you know,
you're right.
And that was a long time.
Yeah, and it's by Brazil standards, it's kind of been a long time again.
2002.
It's been 16 years.
That's a long time
for them.
So which kind of proves my point.
Well,
thanks.
Yes and no, but they've been good all throughout. But nevertheless,
anyway,
for myself, look, Brazil, I think, is the obvious answer. I agree with you. But I went with Belgium.
That's not weird.
I'm really, no, it's not. But I'm truly excited now about this team. 43 goals in qualifying. Friendlies, take them for what they're worth. But their last tune-up game against Costa Rica, they just won 4-1.
That was fun to watch.
Scored four straight. I don't know, like Hazard, Lukaku, Mertens, De Bruyne. I just feel like it's a lot of guys who individually for all their different clubs, I always kind of feel like, and Hazard, I once said on during this past season, I think I said he's one of my favorite players to watch. You know, De Bruyne, I said that before. You know, we've spoken so highly of Lukaku for a number of years now. I'm excited about watching them. Now, here's the only thing with Belgium. It's funny. The way I have on my bracket, I have them going up against Brazil in the quarterfinals, and I don't have them winning that. And so you could look at that and say, oh, well, they got to the quarterfinals in the 2014 World Cup. So, like, what was so fun about Belgium this time around? I do think there's something to be said for a way that a team plays in a tournament.
100%
like,
agree.
If Belgium in 2014 got to the quarterfinals, but by and large, they were blah. They fell short of the expectations that we had for them, not necessarily in how far they went, but in just the way that they played. This time around, I think they'll go just as far as they did 4 years ago.
But it'll be different feeling.
I think you'll feel better about watching them. I think they'll just be a more enjoyable side in this tournament.
I agree with you 100% on that one. And don't forget, like they were beaten by Wales in the quarterfinal of the last major tournament they were in.
It's true.
Like they were very, apart from a blowout victory over Ireland, they weren't convincing at all. And you feel different now, or you hope you feel different. I still think until the ball starts rolling on them, they're an unknown quantity under Martinez. I really... Oh, they're a known unknown. I'm going Rumsfeldian on you right now. We know they're good, but what we don't know is whether we know they'll win and prove to be the team we think they can be.
I'm confused, but I think I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, we know who they are. We know every one of their players intimately. But what we don't know, Andrew, is the future.
Before we move on to the next question, you threw out on Twitter a really cool thing, soliciting people to submit their first, not their favorite, but their first World Cup memory.
Yeah.
We've got a bunch of them here. We went and found the highlights for a select few of the tweets that we did get.
Thanks to everyone, but it was monstrous. There was about 60 entries, like very, very quickly. And a lot of them there was overlap. So the first one we're going to begin with is Emmanuel Lugo. One of my first memories was Maxi Rodriguez volley to knock out my beloved Mexico in the round of 16 at Germany 2006. Beautiful goal. It was a stunning goal.
Yeah.
But it broke my heart. And this is, I believe this is from Telemundo.
Messi la cambia bien para Juanpi. Vamos a ver ahora. Se viene Sorín, se viene Sorín, se viene Sorín. La cambia para Maxi. Rodríguez.
Arco.
Rodríguez. ¡Oh!
Incredible goal.
Often gets lost in the mix, but he's just chest controlled the ball and full volleyed it into the roof of the net from about what would you say, 22, 23 yards?
Yeah. In like a huge moment.
Like the 90 something minute.
98th minute, I think it was.
It's incredible.
Yeah, in the round of 16.
You know what? The most fun thing about these people reminding me, our listeners, about those moments was going back and watching them. I must have watched that 10 times today.
When I was younger, shortly after the 2006 World Cup, I was just like so jacked up about all of this that I went out and bought a DVD box set that has like, it has DVDs from every World Cup going back to like, well, like 1970, I forget, 78 maybe. And it does like DVD, it's like summations of each World Cup. I feel like I kind of want to like stay up late and just binge watch the whole, every one of the World Cup DVDs before this tournament starts. Now.
There's an official film for every World Cup that's made by FIFA with music very of the time. So like the 1986 World Cup in Mexico, it's the movements are soundtracked and it's like kind of new romantic music going behind as you watch Denmark. And it's amazing stuff. It really is.
United Passions has soured me on FIFA productions. I don't know.
This is a solid FIFA production.
Here we go. This is one of my favorite ones because every tournament has this guy, the breakout star, the guy who makes his name, you know, really like what James did for Colombia back in 2014, the player most likely to make a name for himself at this tournament.
You go first.
Okay. I went with Pione Sisto from Denmark. Remember him scoring goals in both legs against Manchester United? It was against Manchester United in the Europa League for when he was with Michelin. They lost that, but he scored both at Old Trafford and at home. Now he's playing his club football for Celta Vigo, and he'll probably be a part of a front three for Denmark, most likely out on the left is typically where he plays. Now for Celta Vigo this season, these are the guys in La Liga who had more assists than Sisto this season in Spain. Suarez, Messi, Benzema, and Pablo Fornals of Villarreal. Fifth most assists in the league. We all remember the 5-1 performance, of course, against your beloved Ireland for Denmark, and we all remember Christian Eriksen's performance in that match specifically, but Sisto did have a couple assists, two assists in that game for Eriksen as well.
He played extremely well when he came in.
He's really good, and I feel like this is a chance for him to kind of make his name on a world stage. I like the idea. You know, we talked in one of our group previews, the England group preview, about Harry Kane and how a lot of what he's able to do for Spurs is because he's got Eriksen behind him feeding him the ball. Sisto is now most likely going to have Eriksen behind him feeding the ball. Now, he's not the center forward. That's going to be Nicola Jorgensen. But he'll still be playing up front, and I'm excited about what this guy can do. He moved to Denmark at 2 months old from Uganda, I believe, and it took him a little while to get his Danish citizenship and become eligible to play for the senior team, but here he is now, and not a moment too soon.
Before I give you my one, can I ask you a genuine question here?
Uh-huh.
Do you think in the modern age, with the way we see and consume football, we see so many players, YouTube clips, social media, highlights, Champions League, do the World Cups have that factor anymore where we see a guy break through?
Where you can be truly surprised by somebody? You're right, not in the way that we could in
previous
early, you know, in the 90s and before. I'd say early 2000s is when YouTube started to really hit, and then definitely more so in like around the 06 World Cup. But I think it can still happen. There's guys who are playing, you know, it may be a guy that you've heard of. Like, I've been familiar with Sisto because he's playing in La Liga, and I remember when he scored those goals in the Europa League. But, like, you can't tell me if all of a sudden he was awesome in the World Cup, we wouldn't still be surprised by it.
Yeah. See, I don't know, because I'm looking at young guys who would make their mark in the tournament. And I was looking at maybe an established player that we know of, but suddenly rises to the top for France. So I was looking at someone like Fekir, who's got, like, so much to prove because of all the transfer talk around him surrounding Liverpool, where he's going to be next season. And he's so kind of in the consciousness. But, like, if you look at his French record, were kind of waiting for him to explode. And I felt like this could be the tournament that he did it in. Then I thought about again, what about Timo Werner? But like everybody knows about Timo Werner.
But he would count for me.
Would he?
He would count as somebody who, look, you say everybody knows about Timo Werner. You have to understand that this is going to sound really arrogant, but it kind of is what it is. You and I and a lot of people that we're closest to follow this sport differently than most other people. In fact, probably even a lot of the people that may listen to this podcast, you know, who focus on like the biggest clubs and their club specifically. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people who just parachute into soccer here in the United States during the World Cup. So Timo Werner is not a household name for a lot of those people.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden he's the new Miroslav Klose for Germany, they're going to say, who's this Timo Werner fella? I don't remember him from previous German sides at other World Cups.
Yeah, and looking at then, I'm giving you a selection of answers here because I was brainstorming about this. I was looking at, like we say, Nigeria with Ian Acho. Like, I actually rate him so highly. And I think...
No, he counts. You don't have to feel bad about these.
But we know who he is.
We do.
And we, to the point...
He had a bit part on Leicester. He counts, man.
But to the point where when he was at City... Everybody was raving about his goals per minute ratio and that he wasn't getting much of a chance. And when he went somewhere else, we'd see how he'd do. Didn't really work out last season.
Yeah.
So those are like a selection of the three people I was kind of thinking for this one. But I honestly...
I think those are good choices, honestly.
But here's the other thing for me. I just remember World Cups were the place you found out about players. I didn't know who Florin Raducanu was. The next thing, he's at West Ham. Like, look at Spurs used to sign players in the mid-90s based on World Cup performance.
By the way, they kind of still do. Look at what happened with Moussa Sissoko after the Euros.
There's so much data now. I feel as if a little bit of the discovery magic is gone. I think that
your exposure to the game has just increased. Mm. I think you're no longer the casual fan. Like, you're so in this that it's kind of your job to know who all these guys are. It's not most people's jobs to know.
Ili Dumitrescu. Gica Popescu.
You can still be surprised by how
the Romanian team was just, and they were all a surprise to me. I was like, and they're going to be in the Premier League. Yay. 98. Coventry, they saw Mustafa Hadji, Youssef Chippo. We're signing them. They're class. I bet you Coventry hadn't a clue who they were before going into the tournament. Now, every championship team will know who the Morocco teams are, their stats, their height, their weight, their pass completion rates, all that stuff.
By the way, with some exceptions, like Frank Ribery in 2006 when he really burst on the scene with France. Where was he? Marseille? You know, that was kind of like a real coming out party for him. So there are exceptions. But overall, and I wish I had the stats in front of me to back it up, but I kind of feel like it's not a great way to do business.
No.
Like, right out of the World Cup, even in 2014, we mentioned Hummus. Real Madrid couldn't wait to spend a truckload of money on him. And now he's on loan at Bayern. Like, he never really fit in there.
But
I just mentioned Sissoko with Spurs. Arshavin, when he went to Arsenal.
Right, you're right.
You know, like, I sometimes wonder, is it a good idea to base all of what you're about to do in your transfer window on a guy who was really good for 3 weeks?
I doubt the top teams do that anymore. I'm pretty sure they don't.
We'll find out. Somebody will. It happens every year.
And don't forget, Hummus, like, Hamas made his transfer fee back several times over in jersey sales.
That's a good point. Let's see. You want to do another first World Cup memory?
Yeah, let's do that. This is from Jesse Pruitt. My first was watching the US score the howler against England and Robert Green while sitting in a bar in Jerusalem.
Dempsey, one of the stars of the Confederations Cup. Testing Green again. Oh, what an error. What an awful moment for Rob Green and for England. Presented Clint Dempsey with an American equaliser. Oh, that will take some getting over.
Another one of those scream out loud by yourself moments.
He's never got over it, really. I know he went on and had a fine career. Relatively fine. I mean, he's a good goalkeeper, but he never really got over it. I've heard him being invited onto radio shows back home to talk about what it's like to throw one into your own net.
I mean,
straight after Karius, who was the first person people picked the phone up.
He's now, like, that was his Bill Buckner moment. Like, when somebody in baseball has an awful moment, like, everybody's like, oh, we got to get Bill Buckner on the line because he knows what this guy's thinking. Like, Rob Green, you're right. Karius probably did that in the Champions League, and every radio station in England was like, oh, who has the number for Rob Green? He knows what this guy's going through. Like, this is what he's known for. I'll never forget that one. I'll never forget that. In my buddy's apartment in Hell's Kitchen.
So weird.
Oh, my God. It was incredible. because England looked they came out so sharp. Gerrard scored with such ease. The U.S.
That was a nice goal they scored.
And it just, oh man, it just.
But by the way, I know England did have chances. The USA had such great chances as well to win that one. Oh my God. It was the one where Josie hit the bar. Rob Green actually made a brilliant save. He put it onto the bar.
We don't remember that one quite as well as we remember the Dempsey. And I always remember feeling kind of weird watching Clint Dempsey just go berserk with his celebration. Because, okay, you just scored in a World Cup, but part of me's like...
Doesn't matter.
You kind of had some help, dude.
You scored in a World Cup.
Yeah.
It was a nice turn, nice shot, but yeah. I mean, it was so savable. Ugh.
Yeah, it really was. Let's see, we move on now. All right, now we get negative. Team with great promise that will let us down.
There's so many flaws amongst the top teams. It's such an even World Cup. I'm picking France.
Oh, my.
They are so loaded, just like we say with Belgium. But I feel, I don't know, I saw something in that 1-1 draw with the US. Like the US is... You
are...
You can't read anything into friendlies, but that...
I learned that from you.
Yeah, but that was their... That was their full strength. That was them at full pelt. And
all right.
I don't feel great about Deschamps. I don't.
Kylian Mbappe picked up a bit of an injury.
Saw that too.
And he arguably looked like France's best player in that friendly against the US.
France would be a much more deadly opponent if teams came out and played against them. I'm convinced of it. They'd cut teams asunder. But when they have to keep it, kind of try and break the lines of defense, they struggle somewhat.
Well, let me ask you this about them.
I don't think they're that much better from 2016 in that regard.
All right. They were...
And they went to the
final.
They
were runners-up. So this is... To say.
Okay, right. Fine.
Well, I'm saying if they make it to the final and lose, are you going to say, oh, I was right? Like, what does it mean to say that they'll let us down? Not going to get out of the group? Not going to get to the semis? Like, what do you envision?
So somewhere, I don't know where it's going to come apart.
Would you like to know where I have them?
Go on, tell me.
So I have them winning their group, which means...
Yeah.
I'm giving some stuff away now. I don't want to say too much. In the quarterfinals, I have them playing Portugal. Are you saying that they could lose that?
Yeah, they could.
And then I have them winning that and then playing Brazil in the semis, which is where I ultimately have France going out.
Even though the Brazilians have a fear of the French from previous tournaments.
So now you're just arguing with yourself.
You see, this is the nonsense of these whole things. We have to see a ball be kicked in anger. This is all rubbish.
Do you want to do? You want to just stop recording now and go home?
No, it's kind of fun, but I don't know. I just don't have a good feeling. It's more of an instinctual thing. I don't know.
I'll tell you what, I give you some credit because you went a lot more courageous than I did.
Well, yeah.
I went with Switzerland.
What?
Yeah. They're very highly ranked.
Team with great promise that will let us down. How dare you? You can't do that. Great promise in this World Cup is Belgium, France, Spain to an extent.
Well, according to my bracket, none of them will let us down. I have them all the teams that you're mentioning, I have them all going far.
Germany.
Yeah, I have them going far. Switzerland, I don't have them getting out of the group. What do you think about that? Now, that's a bold prediction. They're going to ask a lot of Shaqiri. Stoke did that too. How did that turn out? Relegated. Granit Xhaka is a red card waiting to happen.
I can't believe you're doing this.
Why?
Go on.
Haris Seferovic coming off a terrible season with Benfica. He didn't score after October.
If the Swiss don't score
in a friendly the other day.
If the Swiss don't do great, like it'll be just no one will care. Like
I think most people think they'll get out of their
go
group.
Go big. Say something like I said. Something wild and crazy.
But I think all the big teams are going to play well. I know one of them won't, but I don't know who that is. So I'm going with Switzerland. They're in a deep group. There's no obvious weak link in Switzerland's group. And I don't think they're getting out.
Here's me saying,
I challenge you to hear a more bold prediction than that all week.
Here's me saying one of the most attackingly loaded French teams of recent times may be blunt in the final analysis. And you... Go with Switzerland.
Yep.
You're just hanging me out to dry.
Cut apart this is why like this Swiss
this,
cheese.
This is utterly pointless. I need this tournament to start. Come on.
So you didn't care for that one. That's fair. I felt like a coward as I was writing it down. So I'll give you that. I'll give you that. You want to do another memory?
Yeah, let's do another memory.
Let's do it.
James of Mount Vernon. My memory is sitting in my Italian grandfather's living room in New York with cousins, watching Roberto Baggio sky a penalty kick over the bar against Brazil. Heartbreak.
Roberto Baggio, the saviour of Italy throughout this tournament. He's missed it, and Brazil win the World Cup.
So unfair that, like,
he was so brilliant in that tournament.
I know.
The only games...
By the way, he was the third member of Italy to miss a penalty kick.
Right, but it was the deciding... Like, he had to score to keep him afloat even for one more kick. And he just ballooned it. Like, he didn't even... That ball's still travelling. That went out and...
into orbit.
Yeah. It was... The first game, Ireland shut them down. And they just went on a tear, led by him. It was such a singular performance. I remember he was brilliant against Spain. I think that was at Foxborough. He was brilliant. He scored two against the highly fancied to knock out the Bulgarians in the semi-final. It was cruel that it was him that is the memory, the divine ponytail.
Yeah.
Really, really unfair. And what a memory, though, to be in your Italian grandfather's kitchen in New York. That must have been something.
Sad, heartbreaking, yeah. Probably. Oof. Yeah, that was certainly memorable. That's a good shout by him. All right, next question I have here, the kind of the opposite of what we just did, a team with little hope that may surprise us. Can I go first?
Yeah, sure.
I'm going Nigeria.
I said that too.
Oh, really? This is the best side that they've probably had in a long time, probably since 02?
98 okay. Was a loaded team.
I really like Wilfred Ndidi in the midfield for them.
Most, is he going to be fit?
Well, I'll get to that. He most tackles in the Premier League this season. Now, like you say, he had suffered a mild hamstring injury, and there was some question about whether or not he was going to be ready for the first game. And hamstrings are really pesky. Hamstring, calf, all those muscle injuries. However, what I read most recently is that he's recovering really well from it, and it does look like he'll be ready to go. And it's really important that he is, because they're playing Croatia in that first game, and I kind of feel like the second spot in that group is going to come down to those two. In addition to him, though, a pretty imposing line up front. We mentioned Iheanacho, Victor Moses, Alex Iwobi. Alex Iwobi, by the way, the nephew of J.J. Okocha.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah.
The great J.J. Okocha.
Yeah. Iheanacho, like you talked about, he's the wild card, because like you say, he didn't have the season that we had hoped with Leicester City. But generally speaking, there are few young players that do a better job of creating chances and taking chances. And here's what I mean by that. This was from 538.com.
Are we going to get some expected goals here?
You better believe it. Like you read about. I've got a list in front of me of of players 22 and younger in Europe's top five leagues who have the highest number of expected goals plus assists per 90 minutes. Number three on that list is Gabriel Jesus. Number two on that list is Kylian Mbappe. Number one on that list is Kelechi Iheanacho. Now, I should tell you, it's ranging from 2016 to 2018. So, those 3 years. Nevertheless,
so he gets in great positions.
Yes, when he's playing.
Correct.
Now, the difference
is guaranteed to start.
Right, the difference is Mbappe and Gabriel Jesus play a lot more. So, maybe it's more impressive, you know, that they do it because it's over a greater period of time. Their impact is greater.
Larger sample size for them.
But still, I mean, that's like who would have thought that Kelechi Iheanacho would be among that company? So if he can replicate that for his national team, that's huge. That would be absolutely huge for Nigeria. So I really like the look of that team, and I'm pretty excited about watching them in this tournament.
Yeah, I'd also, and not just to be, because they're an African team with that kind of potential as well. But if you look at Senegal, Sadio Mane, Koulibaly, Idrissa Gueye, there's something ticking there as well too.
Yeah.
But I don't want to step all over that, because that will be in our Group H preview pod, which you've probably listened to already.
Oh, okay. Let's see. The storyline that you're most curious about in this tournament. I have a couple things here. I want to hear yours.
I narrowed it down to two. Messi, Sampaoli. Is this figured out? So we've been talking about how Messi's return dragged Argentina over the line. We're talking about the problems they have in midfield, the potential problems they have at the back. Andrew, they've just lost Manuel Lanzini to an ACL injury, which is just Can you imagine being in World Cup camp?
Sucks, man.
It's just the worst. It's absolutely brutal. So that limits their options a little bit further, and probably means that Pavon is up the pecking order in terms of a starting position, which again kind of blows my mind as to how that's going to work. But has he figured it out? Have we found the elixir that means Messi can go deep? Can they even win a World Cup? Because I think if people are being honest with themselves, those who aren't the Ronaldo Messi kind of types who like to pick one or the other, everybody wants Messi to win a World Cup. We really want that to solidify his status as one of the all-time greats. For me and you, most soccer watchers, it's already solidified. But there's such a core group of people in Argentina for whom it would mean so much. And I think it would mean so much to me. He's the best I've ever seen. He just is. And I want this for him. And I'm just wondering if Argentina is not going to produce it in what's probably his last World Cup at his absolute peak. After this, Andrew, it's all downhill. Anything else for him will be gravy. That's just the way time moves. So that's one of the storylines for me. Have Argentina found what they need to do to deliver this for Messi? Because I think he's outstanding for them and he deserves it. He came back and dragged them over the line. The second one is this, and I'll be quick. Feel good, positive England. I'm scared, Andrew. So I grew up in the Republic of Ireland, and as much as we deferred to English soccer and watched it, we never innately, in our very souls, we wanted England to lose at international football. Mm-hmm. That's just what you want. It didn't matter who they were playing, you rooted for the opposition. And now I'm at this point where I kind of like the England team. I like the players. But is what we've seen over the last week to 10 days, is this just a smokescreen? Is this just media spin? Is this team more relaxed? Relaxed enough that it's not going to do an Iceland again? That it's not going to do a 2014 and just go out of the group stage? Like, where are they at? I'm absolutely fascinated. England fascinated me every tournament. This is no different.
That is a great call. How far, what would be a success for them?
I think if quarterfinals.
That's where I have them going. And the way that it would play out, I have them, sadly, facing the Germans.
I have them playing Brazil. Does that make sense?
For that to happen, then I believe you have England winning their group.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I just put it like that because, okay, I've got this early positivity. Say they are good in the group and Belgium are the one that come a cropper.
That would be a quarterfinal matchup.
Yeah.
So either way, most likely they'll face either Brazil or Germany.
I tossed a coin on that one and said that Panama were going to upset Belgium instead of England. That's what I did.
All right. It could all happen. For my storylines, you hit the nail on the head with your first one. That's what I have written down here too. Lionel Messi. Because this could be his World Cup last hurrah, as you kind of mentioned there.
I mean, I wouldn't bank against him being back again, but I'm just saying.
I don't know. He's already.
At his
look,
peak.
He did already retire internationally once.
Yeah. I mean, how much more heartache can a man take?
Yeah. In 15 World Cup matches, he has 5 goals. Not terrible. Doesn't necessarily tell the whole story of his impact.
No.
But look, it's not Barcelona numbers. And that's what the people of Argentina have been waiting for. He's never scored outside of the group stage in a World Cup, which I was really surprised to see. The pressure on him is immense. At Barcelona, the pressure is on him. But it's also, in the past, it was also on Neymar. Neymar bore a lot of the brunt at times. It's also on Suarez. It's also been on Iniesta, Pique. Like, there's a lot of guys. Argentina, they have stars on that team, but it just feels like it's all about him. And that's the way the people of that country sort of view his situation. And remember this, too. When we did their group preview, Mauro Icardi is not at this World Cup. And we read that quote from Hernan Crespo, who believes Icardi's not there because he's not a Messi guy.
Mm.
I don't know that that's true, but Hernan Crespo is somebody that I would think is at least somewhat dialed in with what's happening with this team.
Tim Vickery says that Messi has almost turned into a selector on this team, that he is working in tandem with Sampaoli to create this thing, which yeah. is another layer of pressure that I don't think a player needs.
Last I saw, Westgate Sportsbook had Argentina listed as 5th favorites behind, in this order, Brazil, Germany, France, and Spain.
Sounds about right.
That sounds about right to me too. And then my other storyline of this World Cup. That's right. You ready? VAR.
Mm-hmm. Why'd you do that?
Because I'm nervous. I'm nervous about it. And you know, I've been a supporter of it. I still believe in it. But I don't know if we're ready for this in such a big moment.
We're not, but go on.
Okay. Here, I mean, I just wonder if it needs to still be refined beyond the refinement that has already occurred.
Correct.
I don't love it being used for subjective moments, fouls, things like that. Like, if all of a sudden the NFL decided that they wanted to install instant replay for pass interference or holding penalties, it just feels like it's opening up a can of worms that I don't know that we're ready to deal with.
Should I give you the BBC's breakdown, or are you finished?
I'm not finished, but go ahead.
I'll do it in Champions League voice as well.
Of course, that is the other voice that you possess.
The VAR. A current or former top referee is in place to check decisions on four sorts of incidents. Goals, including missed attacking offences in the build-up. Penalties awarded and not awarded, including missed attacking offences in the build-up. Direct red cards. Cases of mistaken identity where the wrong player is shown a red or yellow card. The referee can accept the information relayed through his earpiece by the VAR team, an option usually reserved for objective calls of fact, such as if a player is offside. For more subjective decisions, such as red cards and penalty fouls, he can review the footage on a pitch-side television monitor before deciding whether to change his initial call. Replays of incidents reviewed by the VAR will be shown on big screens during the World Cup, and the crowd will also be told when a decision is being reviewed and why a decision has been reached.
Here's the thing about that. That sounds wonderful. Oh, they're going to show it on the big screen. Good. They're not going to show it until after the call has been made official. People are going to get restless if they're sitting there not knowing if a goal is about to count. Why can't they show it in real time? I guess maybe they're afraid the crowd will influence the official, but you know what? The official just needs to be better than that. Rise above it.
One of the great elements of the World Cup, of the game, is the celebration.
I don't think it will be muted.
I don't know.
I don't think that it... Look, the NHL has it. Goal celebrations have not been muted in the least in watching hockey games. Touchdown celebrations, sometimes they are on catches that seem unclear.
It's not the celebration. It's the flow and the nature of it. It hits the back of the net. You might look over your shoulder to see if, as the striker, if there's a flag up or anything, and you wheel away and the whole place goes nuts. Any delay in that, Andrew, I'm not having it.
Well, I'm comfortable with it being used for objective decisions. Handballs, offsides, I'm okay with that. It's the subjectivity that makes me a little bit nervous. Then there's this. I'm reading this from The Guardian. Pierluigi Collina is the chairman of FIFA's referee committee.
Collina?
Yeah.
He said,
this was in The Guardian. The chairman of FIFA's referees committee said the problems with lengthy delays during trials had been ironed out. The Italian also said assistant referees had been advised to keep their flag down for tight offside calls and to leave it to VAR to decide. Quote, if you see some assistant referee not raising the flag, it's not because he's making mistakes, Collina said. It's because he's respected the instruction to keep the flag down. They were told to keep the flag down when there's a tight offside incident and there could be a very promising attack or a goal opportunity, because if the assistant referee raises the flag, then everything is finished. It's kind of like in the NFL how referees are told when there's a fumble, just allow it to play out and then we'll go back and see if it was actually a fumble or not. That makes sense to me. Who knows? It might create some, like you say, uncomfortable moments where goals are scored and we're really not sure if they're going to count. But if this thing is going to exist, it's the right thing to do. There's no question about that.
I don't know why.
But I'm nervous.
I don't want it at a World Cup.
Well, you better get on board. I'm nervous about it. I'll tell you that much. I think it's been proven that some of your concerns are valid. I still believe that it's more important for the right team to win. There's too much at stake. But, yeah, it's not the finished product yet. And I wonder if they're wheeling it out at a major moment.
I can't do a summer
soon.
Of VAR talk. I can't do it.
Well, hopefully this... I was going to say hopefully this will be the end of it, but no, it's not going to be. You know there's going to be tons of controversies.
Yeah, it could be a very long summer.
Ugh. How about another World Cup first memory?
David Wall, 2010. I was in eighth grade and my dad was driving me to the NYS Algebra 1 exam. Trying to pick up the end of the USA-Algeria game on XM via the French channels. It was a beautiful sunny day, and I was nearly late to the test trying to discern who had scored.
Howard gratefully claims it. Distribution, brilliant. Landon Donovan, there are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? cross, and Dempsey's denied again, and Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA! Certainly through! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
It's not my first memory, but it is my favorite one. I've never been in a room like that. I was at the third floor of Jack Dempsey's in Midtown Manhattan in like a USA fan party, and I've never seen anything like it. The way the room, people in just sobbing, beer, you know, just everywhere. It was unbelievable, man. I'll never forget it. Great. I'm glad somebody included that one.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about dragging up the past.
Oh, no. What do you mean? Because it's sad? Because we're not in it? Look, if not now, when? These are the things that we've got to live by now.
We've done so much over the last 2 weeks to make a lot of people introspective about U.S. soccer.
No, that one was unforgettable. That's my favorite one. I'm trying to think what would be even close to that for me. I mean, look, I've always said Dempsey's goal at the start of the 2014 World Cup, just because it was like, oh my God, all the excitement and the buildup, and bang, you know, that won't be high. Obviously, in 2002, Donovan's goal against Mexico, really memorable one. Man, that is a good one, that Donovan.
I got to be honest, I'll give you my first memory now. It was my first communion, 1990. And did the whole Catholic thing. My whole family was around, and Ireland were playing Egypt that same day. Possibly the worst game of football in the history of football, but I was hooked. Absolutely hooked. We'd played England a few days beforehand. I was sat on my uncle's knee watching it, and I was 8, and I couldn't take my eyes off it. It was the worst game ever, but I couldn't stop watching it. And I think it was because every time they hit the ball, you could hear it on the TV. So they're hitting this ball, and it's like this, duh. And I was hooked. The jerseys, the grass, everything.
My first one was when I was 10, the 94 World Cup. I don't know if I remember anything else from the game except the Escobar own goal against the United States.
That came up, actually. A few people brought that up.
Yeah, and sadly, like, I kind of almost feel bad that that's my...
You forget Ernie Stewart's goal?
I've seen the highlights so many times, but the Andres Escobar one is the only one that I can remember, like, in real time watching it. For whatever reason, the Ernie Stewart one, I don't have that same memory.
I'm going to go back and do an appraisal of Tab Ramos as a U.S. soccer player. I think he's probably one of the best we've ever had. He might be in the
top. Oh, yeah.
No, but I'm talking top three.
I'm sure in the conversation, certainly.
I think I need to watch that 94 team again. There was something about that team.
Mm-hmm. There certainly was. Let's see. Before we continue now with, we're at the big stuff. Predictions are coming up next. But before that, JJ, oh yes, hiring?
Definitely, and a lot of countries will be after this World Cup. And we're just beforehand as well.
Managers, like Real Madrid.
Crazy stuff.
They can now take this resume off of ZipRecruiter.
That's right.
That's right. Every business needs great people and a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. Well, ZipRecruiter knew that there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. So here's what you do. Right now, listeners to this podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right. It's free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I thought the smartest way to hire was to employ the aforementioned Ernie Stewart.
Well, we're going to find out.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if Ernie Stewart was listening and he goes, that's how I'll do it.
Apply through the ZipRecruiter /offside.
And my job is done.
All right, here we go. It's prediction time. Who is your top scorer in this tournament?
Couldn't narrow it down.
so you're just not going to answer. All right, well, I'll answer.
No, well, you go, because you'll have some kind of data to suggest exactly who it'll be, old Andy database over
there. Well, here's
there.
The thing. Look, you got to select somebody from a team that you have going far.
Not necessarily.
Well, I did.
There's guys can logic. Ramp it up in the group.
Logic tells you that it's usually, you're right, Hamas went out in quarterfinals last time, and I believe he was it.
He was.
In 2014.
Yeah, logic tells me Antoine Griezmann.
Okay.
That's what logic tells me. Logic also tells me Neymar. But I'm thinking it might be a Belgian. I saw Lukaku the other day.
I know.
I mean, he's going to be at the end of a lot of chances. It could be Gabriel Jesus for the same reason. He's going to spearhead that three-pronged attack.
He is who I went with, by the way. 6 goals is what I'm predicting for Gabriel Jesus.
That's fair.
It's my prediction.
Yeah, might be conservative.
Wow.
He might do a juiced Fontaine and score 13. now I'm being facetious.
So you're going, you've got several here. You're just not quite sure.
You know, I'll go with Neymar.
Okay.
Because I expect him... Will Neymar take penalties? I would imagine so.
I was wondering about that.
Because that is
nervous about taking Jesus. But you know what? Hey.
It's a crucial part of it.
Yeah. I thought this would make up for my lack of courage in the Switzerland prediction. Your championship match.
No, that was perfect. If you're going to be neutral like you, pick Switzerland. The most neutral of all the countries. Little historical joke there.
What do you have playing in the final?
Brazil versus Germany.
I have the same thing.
Mm.
I have the same thing. Yeah, I've got, if you would like to know my road to the final.
I really don't.
I have Germany defeating Serbia, then defeating England, probably on penalties, and then defeating Spain in what will be a really memorable semifinal.
That'll be a ding-dong.
And then Brazil, I have defeating Mexico, who that will make 7 consecutive World Cups, not getting past the round of 16. Then I have them beating Belgium. Then I've got Brazil, France, the semifinals. If it plays out the way that I'm seeing it, Brazil versus France, Spain versus Germany. Oh, how good is that? And then Brazil, Germany in the final with a winner of
Brazil.
Same.
I have just jumped off that Spain bandwagon like you wouldn't believe. I'm a coward. I'm starting.
You said in the group preview, you told everyone this is my pick. This is who I have
winning
it.
I know, but I just analysis and watching games and. Maybe it's just I'm so just pumped and amped and excited for the tournament to start that I'm not thinking straight now.
Look, yeah, you're not thinking straight. Oh, I'm picking Brazil to win the World Cup. My mind. Oh, what's wrong with me?
No, I mean, how forthright am I in my views?
I don't know. You're all over the place.
I'm pretty solid usually. And the fact that I've jumped like this is, it's not good, guys.
We have a what to watch for. We haven't had one of these in quite some time because there hasn't really been a whole lot to watch for.
I haven't finished my sound bits yet.
I know. I was going to say, if you allowed me to finish my statement, I was going to say, but before that, we've got one last.
No, we've got two.
We've got two more first memories.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I wanted to mention one that's without audio. That's from Rono EFC6. My first World Cup, 06 in Germany. I was 8 years old and it made me fall in love with this beautiful sport. How can you forget McBride nearly getting murdered by De Rossi?
God. Face just covered in blood.
Also, those US kits are my favorite US kit to this day, the Navy ones.
Yeah, good call.
Christophe Grenier. I vaguely remember watching bits of World Cup since 90, but the first time I can remember is watching the final in 06 with Zidane's headbutt being hooked ever since.
In terms of the decision, as long as they've seen it, it is impossible to argue against it.
This is the incident. Materazzi had an arm around Zidane there. Then they looked at each other. Why did this go on so long?
Well, I think words were obviously said, weren't they? Obviously, Materazzi said something.
There it is. Oh, you can't excuse that. Zidane's career ends in disgrace.
John
it was
Madsen
unbelievable.
And Mark Lawrenson. Almost stepping across each other a little bit there. I was afraid Lawrenson was going to get in the way of, you can't. What was he saying? You can't accept that. Or you can't allow that.
Just going back and watching it again. It's like you want to jump into the screen and stop him. And just be like, Zidane, walk away. Just walk away. I'll never forget that one either. Watching that, I was down the Jersey Shore in Avalon, New Jersey. And like at first, all of a sudden, because he didn't see it at first.
No.
You just see the referee come over and all of a sudden Zidane's walking off the field. He's been shown a red. And you think, what? What just happened? And then the replay, jaw on the floor. on the floor.
Oh, and the picture of him walking past the World Cup.
Yeah.
Wow. What a way to bring down the curtain on your career.
Yeah, unbelievable. Now, fortunately for him, he's rewritten a nice second act.
He has, but in the quiet moments.
You're right. I'm sure it's probably...
Don't forget, he did come out of retirement to play in that World Cup, if I remember correctly. I think he'd retired after 0-2 and then come back.
Pretty shocking stuff.
Yep, that's shocking.
A great and memory from that person. Yeah.
Finally, Julian Unwadze, Oman Biak, his towering header for Cameroon against Argentina in 1990. Opening game, Argentina defending champions, and Cameroon decided they were going to spoil the party.
Oman Biak. Oh, they score! Disaster for Pompidou. And the Giuseppe Meazza Stadium is an unbelievable sight.
And what a run Cameroon went on, all the way to the quarterfinal, where they were bested by England. And too late, Gary Lineker penalties.
Mm. Those were the days. What to watch for, World Cup style. Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern time is when it kicks off.
Oh, finally.
Now, how are you going to do this at work? I mean, all these games are pretty much while people are going to be working, especially on the East Coast.
It's the World Cup. Everyone is going to be watching. How are you going to do this? People are going to go to bars. People are going to have TVs in their office. Mm-hmm. People are going to have a second screen if they're working on a computer. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You're going to be all over. The World Cup is one of those things where were you? Why are you slightly drunk at 3 o'clock in the day? Well, I watched the 2 o'clock World Cup game. On you go.
It's accepted. It's okay.
It's fine.
I cannot show up drunk at work.
You're living in the wrong mind space. You should be asking yourself, why aren't I drunk at work?
Well, I might be asking myself that, but it's not an urge I can follow.
Now, I do believe that...
It's Russia versus Saudi Arabia, by the way. I don't know if I actually said who the game is.
Yeah, that's not... I mean, it's not going to... It could be halftime in this game and you're like, oh, this is dreadful. But at least it's underway. The ball is rolling and it's not long before you can get your teeth into some really good stuff.
Here's some of the other marquee matchups. I'm not going to go through every game, but some of the ones that if you can only watch one game per day, these are the ones that I would suggest. Friday, 8 o'clock a.m. Eastern time, Egypt and Uruguay. What's the deal with Mo?
Hanging out with Chechen despots? That's not fair. He wasn't hanging out with Chechen despots. He was dragged from his bed by a leader of Chechnya who has a very unsavory present, past, and possibly future. And read the New York Times article on it. It's very...
Okay,
very interesting.
Not the question that I was asking. I was asking more about his fitness.
I think he'd be fine. Okay. I hate accusing the Egyptian FA or the Egyptian national team of anything, but he's going to be out if he has to be in a wheelchair, I would imagine.
He was seen training individually with a physical therapist at the stadium in the Chechen capital of Grozny. There's still a chance as to whether or not he'll play in that first match, but he's going to take part in this tournament.
100%.
Yeah.
The real question is whether we see him in that opening game. And again, all my stereotypes are coming back into view, and Uruguay are a physical team.
But they are.
Don't play Mo, because then he could be out for the rest of the summer.
So. And it's very hard to predict when Suarez will bite somebody, because you know he will. Friday, 2 o'clock p.m., this might be the best game of the first set of games.
Yep, it's the best game.
Portugal and Spain.
The Iberian Derby.
We're going to learn a lot about these teams quickly.
We are.
Ronaldo facing a lot of his Real Madrid mates.
Dismissive hand gestures. I'm fascinated by this one.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinated by this one because some... doubts have come into my mind about the cutting edge and maybe the pace in the team that the Spanish have. And I have doubts about Portugal anyway. I hope they're more committed to attacking football than they were at the last tournament. And if they are, it could be fun.
Well, if they are, I don't know that that's the game where we'll see it.
Mm.
But that's not to say that they won't be later on in the tournament. Saturday, 9 a.m., Argentina and Iceland. Our first look at Messi. As he goes up against the darlings of this tournament
and everybody loves
the European Championships.
Finding it hard to think they'll recreate anything close to what they did in the Euros.
I'm kind of rooting for Messi. So I know I am as well. Iceland is just like the ultimate underdog story, but as a neutral, I just, like you said, I kind of just want to see him do it.
There's a storyline there, and he's been a, I hate the word narrative now because it gets used too much, but yeah, the narrative for me is not plucky Iceland, it's Messi.
And then Sunday, 11 a.m., the Mexicans are in action.
El Tri.
And what a start, as they will face Germany, the defending world champions. A couple notes on this. Diego Reyes is out of the World Cup for Mexico with an injury. He's been replaced by Eric Gutierrez. Also, Raul Jimenez has been loaned to newly promoted side Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Interesting. I wonder how that came about.
On loan from Benfica.
Oh, on loan from a Portuguese team. That's interesting. How could that have come about? Because Wolves don't have any connection to, you know, important Portuguese agencies, player agents, nothing like that.
Well, there you go. JJ has spoken. Do you see Mexico? I mean, that's a tough first match for the Mexican side. I don't know.
You wouldn't want to be going on what happened in the Confederations Cup, that's for sure. Wow, it's a baptism of fire for them.
Yeah.
You can't look beyond Germany for the win in that one, really.
No, I would pick Germany to win that game.
And then you wonder what that does to Mexico going forward then.
Well, look, there's no, you can't feel like your World Cup is ruined because you lost the game to Germany.
No.
Just limit the damage. Look, Mexico are good.
Yeah.
I don't see them getting blown out by anybody, and I think they'll be in that game.
Even though we've seen them being blown out. But
well, we saw it with Chile, certainly, in Copa America. But I don't know. It's still a team, even without Diego Reyes, it's still a team that I think highly of. I'm excited about their attack. Which I've talked about with Vela, Chicharito.
Here's the thing. If that game ends 1-1, I won't be bowled over shocked. I just don't know. I'm just so excited.
As am I. And we're here. I mean, it is upon us. I thought a nice way for us to go out here. I know normally we do our whole, like, check you later fun boy routine, but the World Cup theme song is out.
The official one.
Will Smith, Nicky Jam, Era, Estrefi.
Oh, yeah, Era.
I thought they'll play us out and play us right into the start of Russia 2018. What do you think of that?
Can't wait.
Good stuff, my friend.